from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Remember the shock of Scottie Scheffler getting arrested before the second round of the PGA Championship earlier this month? It was gripping, even to follow it on social media, and that's where I was following it. I was supposed to be sleeping. That was not happening. It was pretty crazy. In the pre-dawn hours, and we had just had an interview with our friend Matt Adams from Golf Channel and Fairways of Life, and we're previewing the second round and talking about the waning interest in golf, at least in terms of viewership on TV, and how Rory McIlroy is really the only guy that moves the needles. What about Tiger? What about the majors? What about the LIV PGA merger? Editor's note, it's a sham. We're having a typical conversation about the state of golf and the PGA Championship. And while we're talking to Matt Adams, Scottie Scheffler's getting arrested. And so that gripped not just the golf world, which clearly it did, but also mainstream media. Because it was shocking to see Scheffler hauled away in the dark with the flashing lights, get thrown into a cop car, and then his mugshot, which I think may have been AI generated, but him in an orange jumpsuit, only to then see him an hour later show up at Valhalla in Louisville and proceed to play his second round. A tee time that was moved to accommodate his arrest. Crazy enough. Well, his initial arraignment hearing got bumped because of conflicts with scheduling, I think. And now we find out criminal charges have been dropped completely. I'm assuming the arrest record will be expunged as well, but maybe not. Maybe that's not part of this. The number one golfer in the world, he was relatively gracious on social media. I hold no ill will toward Officer Brian Gillis. I wish to put this incident behind me and move on, and I hope he will do the same. Police officers have a difficult job, and I hold them in high regard. This was a severe miscommunication in a chaotic situation. Now remember, part of the issue is that Detective Gillis failed to turn on his body cam. And so there goes any evidence other than potentially the witnesses who were around, but they weren't right there in the midst of the communication between Scheffler and Gillis. Gillis claiming that he gave instructions to Scheffler to stop, that Scheffler tried to drive around him. He's standing in the middle of the road. He grabs on to Scheffler's vehicle. He gets dragged. But none of this is on body cam. And so that was his mistake. And in the wake of all of the criticism and the backlash for the Louisville Police Department, it seems like the PD, well, the DA, so the district attorney in Jefferson County, just decided not worth it. So charges were dismissed with prejudice, meaning they can't be filed again in the future. So that would be the end of that. Steve Romines is Scottie Scheffler's attorney. He did speak after finding out the charges were being dropped like a hot potato.
We were pleased that the case was dismissed today. Obviously, was dismissed without prejudice or with prejudice, which is something that we had required. We were prepared to go forward and litigate this matter. We were also prepared to litigate the case civilly. At the time actually we were going to start beginning litigating it civilly on Monday, Scottie had to appear in court, we were going to begin litigation regarding the civil matter. He does not wish to do that. He wants to move on, and you know, he's obviously having a historic career.
Is that a trash truck? A garbage truck in the background?
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, did you hear what Romine said, though? They were actually preparing litigation of their own to sue the Louisville Metro Police Department, but also potentially a civil suit for damages against Gillis and the police department. So why will they not move forward? This again, Steve Romines.
Lawsuits are paid by the taxpayers. If he prevails in civil litigation against LMPD, who pays that? Taxpayers of Louisville. He doesn't wish the taxpayers of Louisville to pay him for whatever occurred. Also, too, litigation is a distraction for anyone. And the truly historic season he is having right now, being involved in litigation would be a distraction.
Yeah, it does seem like it would be more trouble than it's worth, though I do like the touch he put in there at the beginning about how it would be the taxpayers who would end up paying Scottie Scheffler. And does Scottie Scheffler need the money? Nah. Hell to the nah. So it almost seems, even though it would be more about clearing his name and more about how he was treated, according to his attorney, the money is not something he needs. So why put the taxpayers in that situation where they're essentially feeding money to a millionaire funneling money through the Louisville Metro Police Department to a millionaire? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, here's something that I found interesting coming out of this hearing on Wednesday. As the charges were dropped, apparently, according to the defense, in this case, Steve Romines, there were two witnesses who actually tell a different story than Detective Gillis. Remember, he said he was dragged to the point where his pants were torn and there were scrapes on his knee. He was taken to a local hospital. What we heard is that the pants couldn't be saved. They were torn up enough that they had to be junked. But Romines is saying that's not the case. Well, then why did Scheffler initially agree with the Gillis side of the story? So that is a little bit of a twist. Why would Scheffler agree to that? Why would Scheffler go along with this police detective's version of the story if that's not actually what happened? And Romines is saying, we've got witnesses that will prove it or could prove it.
Here's what happened, is he is being interrogated after the most stressful situation of his life, right? And the officer is actually asking him leading questions and trying to get him to agree with them, okay? And that's why you don't talk to the police, because they are going to try to put words in your mouth. Exactly what they did.
But that was after he read his Miranda rights. He didn't
He didn't have to speak, but again, he asked to talk to the officer. He wanted to explain to him what happened. However, they are trying to get him to confess to something that he didn't do. And the video evidence shows he didn't do it.
So Romine's a lot more passionate in that response about Scheffler changing his story, or Scheffler initially agreeing with Detective Gillis only to turn around and then say that's not what happened. And I do see how that could be accurate. I've never been arrested before. It would be extremely stressful whether or not I was going to a golf tournament. But if I try to explain it in my own terms, I'm coming to work. Every now and then there are checkpoints, alcohol checkpoints. Maybe. One officer, I think, waves me through the checkpoint. On my way to work, maybe he sees that I'm on my way to work, or he asks me, I say, yes, I'm on my way to work. Maybe there's a stack of 8 cars. I can actually see this playing out. There's a stack of 8 cars in one line. An officer, I'm number 8 in line. I'm a little bit stressed about getting to work. I tell the officer who comes back to my car, hey, I really need to get to work. I'm running a little bit late. Here's my ID. Here's my company card. Do you mind if I just go around? I'm not drinking. I've got nothing to hide. You can check my license, whatever. What if he waved me around? And then I get up toward the front of the line and there's another cop who thinks I'm just driving past the checkpoint without stopping, doesn't realize that an officer behind him has told me it's okay to go. And so I try to accelerate through this area to get to work. I'm a little bit stressed. I'm running late. And somehow this other officer believes I'm ignoring his directions. And I do work at night, so it would be at night. So I can certainly understand if I got hauled out of my car and I believe that I had the permission from one officer to go. This other officer didn't know that. He thinks I'm disobeying orders, so he pulls me out of the car. He puts me in handcuffs. I would be freaked out because it's a big misunderstanding. I was told to go. And what Scheffler and his attorney were saying is, well, I mean, first of all, they said because of the accident, and it was a fatal accident, it took a man's life. So it was a chaotic situation, as they mentioned. Scheffler believed that he had permission from another officer somewhere in the back, and because he was trying to get to his tee time, that he was allowed to go per instructions that they're given, these golfers are given. So he thinks he has the right to drive around. This other officer doesn't know it, doesn't care, has no idea who he is, whatever the case is. I certainly could see where people, and that would include me, would get flustered and would be upset. And no, I didn't do it. It was an accident, la la. And maybe admit to things that weren't true. Again, you're in that situation for the first time, as was Scottie Scheffler. And I can certainly understand how emotion and chaos and just fear kind of engulf you. And Romines sounds like he had made this point very clearly in court, right? He got very fired up about that one particular point. Jefferson County Attorney Mike O'Connell, he gives the county's version of why they're dropping charges.
Mr. Scheffler's characterization that this was, quote, a big misunderstanding, close quote, is corroborated by the evidence. The evidence we reviewed supports the conclusion that Detective Gillis was concerned for public safety at the scene when he initiated contact with Mr. Scheffler. However, Mr. Scheffler's actions and the evidence surrounding their exchange during this misunderstanding do not satisfy the elements of any criminal offenses.
Gosh, I appreciate that. I'm glad whether or not Detective Gillis himself did it or would have wanted to see the charges drop. I'm really glad that the police department's not pursuing this, but also that Scheffler's side is not pursuing any litigation. It was embarrassing for him. I'm sure it was highly distressful. Distressing and stressful. That was I made up a word there, distressful.
I didn't even realize. I was like, that's a good word.
Thank you, Jay. It was highly distressing and stressful. It was both of those things. Stress being the root word there. I can see where it's better for both parties just to let it go. Nothing positive can come out of this. And as much as it was angst for Scheffler and it was a mess for the police department, they've got more important ways that they should and could direct their time and their attention, as does the county attorney. And I can see why Scheffler would just want to put the whole thing behind him and not pretend like it never happened, but just not to pursue it, not to keep it front and center for him or for law enforcement. All right, coming up, Karen Garigian from Boston. It's busy right now. Celtics into the NBA Finals, potentially a rematch with Kyrie, or I should say a reunion with Kyrie. They love him there. And then also the Patriots trying to break in a new coach, a new quarterback. But what else do they need? We're excited to welcome Karen back to the show. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Tatum against Turner. Tatum pushes off, steps back, 3 in the air, no good, rebound, Drew Holiday, 4 seconds to go, kick out Jaylen, can they get to him to commit the foul? They cannot, and it's over. It's over. The Boston Celtics swarm the floor.
You got to find different ways to win. You got to learn to protect leads. You got to learn to come back from deficits. You have to learn to execute in close game situations. You have to communicate adjustments, and you just got to make plays. You got to be tough-minded.
Playoffs is like an emotional roller coaster, and trying to find a balance right in between the wins and the losses, trying to stay even keeled throughout the entire, however long you're playing. Is important. The team that does that the best usually has a lot of success.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's busy in Boston, busy for New England sports fans, because yes, the Celtics are back into the NBA Finals for the second time in 3 years with some unfinished business. And at the same time, reporters, mostly, are getting their first glimpses of Drake May in a New England setting where there's no Tom Brady and no Bill Belichick on the football field. That hasn't happened in a very long time. And so it's all new, plenty to talk about, even here in late May. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Glad to have you with us as we round into what is a Thursday morning. Of course, the Celtics are done. They sweep the Indiana Pacers. But game five, Mavericks and Timberwolves takes place tonight, and that could decide the matchup, or we could see that extend on into the weekend in the Western Conference Finals. We are pleased to welcome Karen Garigian, who is a columnist, a longtime insider and reporter. It's really covered everything New England sports, but right now doing some double duty with the Celtics into the conference finals and then through the conference finals and then the Patriots going through their OTAs and their practices and trying to start over, essentially, because it's all new there. So, Karen, let's start with the Celtics. They're back into the NBA Finals, but what's different about this team in 2024?
I would say that we've always wondered if they had it in them to win the close games and to beat opponents and not have series extend, you know, while they're trying to make their way through. And I think this year's team has a different kind of resolve. I think they're more talented than they've been in the recent past, and they've been able to close out games and close out series. And I think they have a confidence playing with each other. It's just kind of a different vibe.
What about Jaylen Brown? He was the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And I kind of feel like maybe of all the Celtics, he's the one that looks so comfortable, mature, in charge, and ready to punch through to victory.
You know, I think last year in Game 7 against the Miami Heat and the Eastern Conference Championship, he had one of his worst games. I mean, he was like a turnover machine. And I think that's kind of stuck with him. And I think he's been on a kind of a mission to right the ship and to show himself to be the player that he believes he is. I also think he has a chip on his shoulder because I don't think he thinks people give him enough credit for being the player that he is. He worked really hard in the offseason to improve as a defender. He worked on some of his stumbling blocks. I think it bothered him that he didn't get all NBA status, at least, you know, or all defensive player of the year. So I think he's kind of on a mission to kind of prove to the detractors and doubters what kind of a player he really is.
He definitely appears to be playing that way right now. And so a week to wait for the Celtics, which means we have time to focus on the Patriots. Why not? It is the end of May and there's practices and there's workouts and soon it'll be mandatory OTAs. How different is it around the Pats now, Karen, after your years of covering them, but this year with no Bill Belichick?
It is different. First of all, well, Gerard Mayo is the new coach. He played for Belichick. He coached with Belichick. And you know, in some ways, he's kind of a breath of fresh air because he's personable with reporters. He answers questions, and he's not gruff. He doesn't give you one-word answers. I'm just talking from a media standpoint.
Yes.
But the players have also taken note that they're not getting reamed out as much by the head coach or sworn at. And, you know, they'll openly tell you it's just a different vibe. And I don't think that was necessarily a knock on Coach Belichick. It's just different and refreshing for them to have a less stressful environment, let's say.
What type of coach is Gerard?
Well, I think we're going to find out. He describes himself and the players describe him as a player's coach. He wants players to be able to talk to him. You know, he wanted to take the stress out of the air and have them not be afraid to talk or not be afraid to let their feelings known. I mean, whether you're a veteran or a rookie. But by the same token, one of the players was talking today and says, look, he's tough when he has to be. But it's just, you know, it's just different. Gerard is maybe 10, only 10 years removed from playing. Mm-hmm. And so he's much closer in age. And I think he gets today's athlete a little more than 72-year-old Bill Belichick. I think Bill tried to evolve over time, but it was still tough. And players of this age want explanations for why they're doing certain things, as opposed to the coach is saying, Bill saying, well, because I said so. They want to know the whys behind things. And Jerron is fine with that because he gets it. He was in that culture a little bit, or in that culture as it evolved. And so, yeah, he wants them to speak. If people have questions, he's going to answer the questions. And that includes the players.
Interesting. Karen Garigian is with us from Boston, Patriots reporter and columnist for Mass Live Sports. One of our favorites here on After Hours with Amy Lawrence. One of the reasons I was thinking of you is because I caught one of your headlines on social that said, trying to make sense of the rookie quarterback, Drake May, as the third string QB, at least initially in the spring depth chart. So what did you figure out?
I think they don't want to make the same mistakes that they made with Mac Jones mm-hmm. earlier. I think they know they're in a rebuild, even though it's in some instances or in a lot of instances, a rebuild would force you to play the quarterback taken number 3 overall right away. But I think they're willing to, you know, wait till he's ready. Or closer to being ready. I think they feel comfortable with Jacoby Brissett. I think they feel comfortable with their defense. And I think until they're confident that they're not going to be doing harm to Drake May by putting him in, out there, and by that I mean, you know, is he ready for the NFL? But more than that, can the offensive line block for him and not get him killed?
Ugh.
Does he have enough weapons to succeed? So I think they're kind of in that determining process. But I mean, Drake May also has a couple of fundamental mechanical type issues that they're working on with his footwork and so on. And he's learning a new offense. They're going to take their time. And again, I'm not saying you won't see him week one, but I'm saying to you, he's going to have to absolutely beat out Jacoby Brissett to be there, to be the starter on week one.
When you say mistakes with Mac Jones, does that include throwing him out there before he was ready?
Actually, I mean, he had one of the best rookie years ever recorded by a quarterback. I think the mistake they feel was in the developmental process of that quarterback. From that promising rookie year, they sent him on a tailspin, you know, after Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator who did so well with Mac Jones, left. Bill Belichick figured he could stick anyone in there as an offensive coordinator, and the kid would do well, only having Matt Patricia, who basically only coached defense, and Joe Judge, basically in charge of Mac Jones, proved to be a disaster. And for a lot of reasons, because Matt Patricia wasn't equipped to run a modern offense. Their offensive line was terrible. You know, between that and not having receivers to get open, just week by week, essentially destroyed the confidence of Mac Jones.
Karen, from what you saw of him and what you know of him in those years covering him, how much do you think a fresh start could resurrect his NFL career?
You know, even with Coach Belichick gone, even with Matt Patricia gone, even with all the evil parts gone, I still think it was best for him to move on elsewhere. I mean, it got to the point where they were chanting for Bailey Zappe to come in, and he needed a fresh start. Being home in Jacksonville, where he's from, I think he's in a very good situation, you know, kind of backing up Trevor Lawrence. If Lawrence gets hurt, I think they like the fact that they have someone who has at least a pedigree to step in to be able to take over. You know, whether Mac Jones can get past his demons, seeing rushers that aren't there, trying to do too much, you know, which was part of his problem here too. I mean, if he can get past how far he fell, if he can get himself up, I think he can be a very, you know, a good quarterback in the league. I'm not saying great, but I think pretty good.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, Karen Garigian with us to talk Patriots, even in these early infancy stages of Gerard Mayo's tenure. What are some of the other major questions as they go through this process?
Many of the questions are all on offense. They don't really have a left tackle. They drafted a kid, Saydon Wallace, who only played right tackle in college, and they're thinking that they drafted him thinking, well, we can move him to left, but it's really not that simple. They signed a tackle from Pittsburgh. I think he played on the left side a little bit in college, but in the pros, only the right side. And he even said, it's Chuck's Okorafor. He even told us it's a big adjustment for him to move to the left side, and he's learning as quickly as he can. So when you really don't have any natural left tackles, that's a little bit scary, especially if you're going to throw the franchise number 3 overall pick under center. Number 2 is, you know, they did draft several receivers, but the issue with their receiving core is they basically have a bunch of number 3 receivers. Number 2, if you're being generous. So they don't really have any top dogs. They don't have any guys who can separate from man coverage. They don't have any game-breaking type of talent. And in today's NFL, it's an offensive-driven league.
Right.
You need receivers. You need great receivers. And the Patriots have a bunch of good receivers. So therein lies quite a bit of their problems.
Is that all?
Is that all? Oh, yeah, that piece of cake.
Coming out of that documentary that was done, it certainly seemed like maybe there was more to a rift between Bob Kraft and Bill Belichick. What did you make of that, their relationship, I guess, in the wake of some of those revelations?
Well, I think Bob Kraft tolerated quite a bit while they were winning. You know, the Belichick kind of ways. And like anything, when you're not winning, it's harder to tolerate some things. And I think Belichick knew that too, as long as he was winning. I mean, Belichick basically ruled over and lorded over everything. That's what happens when you win 6 Super Bowls, right?
Right.
And, you know, Kraft allowed that to happen because, hey, you know, they're winning and he's making money hand over fist. He's the belle of the ball. He went on Belichick's side when Belichick said it was time to move on from Brady. That didn't prove to be a wise decision. You know, in the years after, you know, some decision making on the part of Bill, his drafting was not good. You know, there was just cause. I still think it was hard to sever that tie in some ways, but in other ways it wasn't. I think because of certain things that have come out, you know, both from the documentary, both from things that that have been written in ESPN exposés. You know, I don't think they're on the best of terms, but it will be interesting, Amy, to see if Belichick comes to Tom Brady's induction ceremony, because the Patriots have waived the year limit and have this huge ceremony planned for June 12th.
There's no way he could not be there. Come on. No way.
Well, you know, he showed up at the roast and Kraft was there. So,
okay.
See, I think Bill will do it for Brady. But if this was just something for Robert, I'm not sure if he would show up.
One more thing, Karen, before I let you go. I've heard from some Patriots fans on social, and granted, that's just a limited sample size, who have lowered their expectations. You use the word rebuild. And so the last couple years, I think, have taken their toll. And it's funny how quickly people forget the glory years, right? And now how agonizing these couple down years are. What should the expectations be for this Patriots 24 season?
Well, you know, if it was just on what they are on paper, which is a good defensive team and an offensive team that they're trying to remake and rebuild under a quarterback taken number 3 overall, you'd say, well, you know, maybe they'll get to 500 this year after 4 wins. But the thing that's working hugely against them is their schedule. They have a really tough schedule, tough opponents, tough quarterbacks. And I think they'll win games, but, you know, it's going to be hard for me to see them getting up around 500 still, even with things change. And I do think it's going to take a while for all the coaches to kind of, the whole offensive staff is new. There are some new coaches on the defensive staff, and I think it just takes some time for them to evolve and get into their rhythm and get into really teaching their systems.
And here it is May, and yet there's still always intrigue when it comes to the NFL. So I could have said this earlier, but Kyrie Irving will be facing the Celtics. So there's some drama too. If the Mavericks can move on, we'll get that reunion in Boston. Oh, the fans are going to be excited to see him.
Yeah, excited is in a slanted way, I think.
Yes.
Kyrie comes in on like the top 10 villains list. So, yeah, but that's great. We us, we love storylines.
Oh, yes.
We love drama.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, Kyrie has, you know, rubbed sage on the court to take away the evil spirit. And he stomped on the leprechaun. And, oh, my goodness, so many evils that Kyrie has perpetrated on Boston. So
yeah, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how that all, but he's a changed man. He's a changed man though. So we'll see. It'll be a love affair.
Yeah. I don't believe it for a second. Kyrie's don't change their spots. No way. All right. You can find Karen on Twitter at KGurigian, GUREGIAN. And she covers the Patriots, but also the Celtics for Mass Live Sports. And always good to have her on the show. It's good to talk to you again, Karen. Thank you so much.
And thanks for having me, Amy. I always love coming on.
Well, and now I can't wait. I don't root for teams, but I will be rooting for a Kyrie Boston Celtics reunion. And when I said the fans would be excited, I meant excited to let him know exactly how they feel about
him. Boston hates you.
Right. Sage on the court and all. All right. We didn't have basketball last night, but we did have game 4 of the Western Conference Finals on the ice. Edmonton, it's been a roller coaster for these Oilers. They're up, they're down, they're all around. They can't figure it out. Oh, and their coach, he's salty too. It happens with coaches.
Why
this
are you
time
so
of the year.
Pissy, Leon?
See what I mean?
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Has it neutral territory. Tapped it in the Stars rush in. Shot, score! Wyatt Johnston from the left wing circle. They wanted a better start. They get one 58 seconds in. Shot by Lindell. Score! It redirected right off the draw. And Dallas has a 2-0 lead. here 5.5 minutes into game four. Here's Nurse to Perry over the line. A rich shot juggled by Otter. Rebound, score! Ryan McLeod! And boy, did he need that! His first point of any kind in the playoffs! And he puts the Oilers right back in this game! It's 2-1 in game four! And the Oilers were able to power their way through the middle. Here's Nugent Hopkins off a check. McDavid's free. A shot denied. Rebound, score! And this game is tied! Evan Bouchard sliding back door!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's been a tug of war back and forth between the Dallas Stars, the Edmonton Oilers, and they weren't done. In fact, you're thinking about Edmonton and how they've kind of put themselves in these awkward positions. They get behind and they feel like they don't start out well, or they start out like a house on fire and then they can't continue it. When are we going to get 60 full minutes from them? But I suppose in any situation, you'll take 5 unanswered goals.
Harley this time shoots, and that was blocked in front. And it's Connor Brown, 2-on-1, shorthanded. Brown in over the line, left wing, centers, one-timer, score! Matthias Janmark has given Edmonton its first lead of the night, 3-2. Now a steal by Draisaitl, to Hyman, back to Draisaitl, shoots and scores! 4-2, Edmonton extends to a two-goal lead! McDavid to Nugent Hopkins could not muscle it out. Ben will shovel it down low. Bouchard is up and okay. Ekholm wires it. Score! 190 feet. Ekholm makes it 5-2. And this series is going to be tied.
The voice and the energy of our friend Jack Michaels on Oilers radio, before that Stars radio, of course. So 5 unanswered goals. Still, though, you kind of wonder what happened there at the beginning. I mean, that start is not what Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid wanted.
I think maybe we were a little sleepy for a couple minutes there. I would say maybe a little unfortunate, too, maybe the second one, but found our legs, got going a little bit, started to play our game, and stayed fresh, rolled lines, and obviously we're a tough team to handle when we play that way.
Not the start we wanted, but game three we had the start we wanted. It didn't matter, so kind of flipped the script there on them. But everybody battled hard, and a big win. Obviously, we knew what was on the line, and real big win, and make it a best of three here.
Draisaitl now with 10 goals in these playoffs. McDavid had a pair of assists, including the empty netter, and you hear him there on Sportsnet. I think it's worth noting, just because we make so much of the butt fumble, that there was a butt goal of sorts with Darnell Nurse, who is an Oilers defenseman. I don't know if that phrase will catch on, a butt goal. But his deflection off his rear end, it actually led to a goal for the Dallas Stars, right? So
I've never seen a butt punt before, man.
Remember the butt punt?
The butt punt and the butt fumble. Could this be a butt goal?
It is now.
I read one article that described it as Nurse's posterior. Do you think a lot of people were reading that thought, what body part is posterior? Or maybe they thought that was a item of equipment he was wearing, his posterior, not realizing that was his rear end. So yeah, the butt goal. Thankfully, though, the butt goal is forgotten in a big win to tie the series for Edmonton. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Listening to the After Hours podcast.
Has it neutral territory, tapped it in the Stars rush in, shot, score! Wyatt Johnston from the left wing circle! They wanted a better start, they get one 58 seconds in! Shot by Lindell, score! It redirected right off the draw! And Dallas has a 2-0 lead here 5.5 minutes into game four.
Here's Nurse to Perry over the line. A rim shot juggled by Archer. Rebound, score! Ryan McLeod! And boy, did he need that! His first point of any kind in the playoffs! And he puts the Oilers right back in this game! It's 2-1 in game four!
And the Oilers were able to power their way through the middle. Here's Nugent Hopkins off a check. McDavid's free. A shot denied. Rebound, score! And this game is tied! Evan Bouchard sliding back door!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's been a tug of war back and forth between the Dallas Stars, the Edmonton Oilers, and they weren't done. In fact, you're thinking about Edmonton and how they've kind of put themselves in these awkward positions. They get behind and they feel like they don't start out well, or they start out like a house on fire and then they can't continue it. When are we going to get 60 full minutes from them? But I suppose in any situation, you'll take five unanswered goals.
Harley this time shoots, and that was blocked in front. And it's Connor Brown, 2-on-1, shorthanded. Brown in over the line, left wing, centers. What timer score! Matthias Janmark has given Edmonton its first lead of the night, 3-2. Now a steal by Draisaitl. To Hyman, back to Draisaitl. Shoots and scores, 4-2. Edmonton extends to a two-goal lead. Two goals in 51 seconds. McDavid and Nugent Hopkins could not muscle it out. Ben will shovel it down low. Bouchard is up and okay. Ekholm wires it. Score! 190 feet. Ekholm makes it 5-2, and this series is going to be tied.
The voice and the energy of our friend Jack Michaels on Oilers Radio, before that Stars Radio, of course. So five unanswered goals. Still, though, you kind of wonder what happened there at the beginning. I mean, that start is not what Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid wanted.
I think maybe we were a little sleepy for a couple minutes there. I would say maybe a little unfortunate too, maybe the second one, but found our legs, got going a little bit, started to play our game, and stayed fresh, rolled lines, and obviously we're a tough team to handle when we play that way.
Not the start we wanted, but game three we had the start we wanted, it didn't matter, so kind of flipped the script there on them, but everybody battled hard, and a big win. Obviously, we knew what was on the line, and real big win, and make it a best of three here.
Draisaitl now with 10 goals in these playoffs. McDavid had a pair of assists, including the empty netter, and you hear him there on Sportsnet. I think it's worth noting, just because we make so much of the butt fumble, that there was a butt goal of sorts with Darnell Nurse, who is an Oilers defenseman. I don't know if that phrase will catch on, a butt goal. But his deflection off his rear end, it actually led to a goal for the Dallas Stars, right? So
I've never seen a butt punt before, man.
Remember the butt punt?
The butt punt and the butt fumble. Could this be a butt goal?
It is now.
I read one article that described it as Nurse's posterior. Do you think a lot of people reading that thought, what body part is posterior? Or maybe they thought that was a item of equipment he was wearing, his posterior, not realizing that was his rear end. So yeah, the butt goal. Thankfully, though, the butt goal is forgotten in a big win to tie the series for Edmonton. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be to be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.